Well, good morning. Welcome to this Thursday morning, the first day of July. The second half of 2021 begins today, and we are thrilled that you are with us. We love having you here, and we have a lot to talk about. Yesterday was a hell of a news day. It was hard to keep track of everything, but I think we'll try to do all of that this morning and talk about as many possible topics as we can. There's a lot, but we have a lot to say, and we have a wonderful panel to comment on such items, so we'll get started. Let me introduce the panel to you, but also remind you that you can be a part of the program by writing to us, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm fine. First, there was the invention of penicillin. It was a great moment in American history. And then there was decaf coffee.
Yes. Anybody else on great inventions?
I'm the only newspaper person you'll ever meet who neither drinks coffee or beer.
Really? So is tea your beverage of choice?
I like tea. It was never very good if you'd say to a source, let's meet over a cup of hot cocoa.
No.
No, it doesn't have the sexiness to
it. No, it doesn't.
Humphrey Bogart in
it
Deadline USA.
It does on Hallmark movies, just saying.
All right, well, that's the voice you hear is that of Ira Fussell, publisher emeritus of the Daily Freeman. Good morning, Ira.
Good morning, Joe and all. Nice to be back.
It's wonderful to have you back. We also welcome back our dear friend, Fran Berman, Edward Hamilton, Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI and Faculty Associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. And she's back in the studio, so we couldn't be more thrilled.
I'm back in the studio. I'm so excited. And it has way more air conditioning than my un-air-conditioned home.
Oh, yeah.
Is that philosophical on your part to not do air conditioning?
I have a beautiful old Victorian and no air conditioning.
Yeah, we have the same situation. But my marriage, it's a difficulty because I'm really not allowed to turn on air conditioning.
Even when it gets as extreme as this.
Thank you for
sharing.
Yes, yes. Even when it gets extremely hot, like 90 degrees. And Roselle has a fan, a big old fan she puts in her window, and it goes.
Those fans work. And you also get good cross breezes for most weather.
You all stand together. I know you. I know what
the cross breezes. All right. We also welcome Dorcia Pleers is here. She is Albany's chief city auditor. Dorcia, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. I'm great and happy to be here.
You cool?
He cool.
You're keeping cool?
I am keeping cool, and this is one of the cooler days compared to the days that we've had in the past, so no complaints here.
After that storm moved through last night, it was like, oh, God, thank you very much, because it was just, it was great. Although everything sort of inside was still humid and sticky,
and then you go
outside, and it was like, oh, this is lovely.
That's right.
So you you look for the cross breeze, as it were. Good morning, all. Let's get started. We have a lot to talk about, as I said. And, when I woke up yesterday morning, I didn't think that, I don't know that many people would have thought that Bill Cosby would have been released from prison, but he was. Bill Cosby was released from jail yesterday after federal prison, or not state prison. Federal prison.
I believe.
After sexual assault conviction is vacated by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court. He walked out of a prison in Pennsylvania as a free man.
Well, then it couldn't have been federal.
No, you're right. Now, second thoughts.
Now, I bore you just for a second with minor details, but when I was a kid, the prison he was in was called Gratersford, and that was just up the road from where we lived. But it's now, I believe, called Phoenix, and that's the facility where he was out. So as they were showing the car, I don't know if you were watching this on CNN yesterday, but they showed the car that left the lawyer's office. It was like a white, I don't know, it looked like a white Prius.
A white car.
Yeah. And it went down the road, and we followed it for like 20 miles. Anyway, his release was a sudden and shocking turn in a saga of a man who had once been one of America's most beloved entertainers, but who has faced dozens of assault allegations in the past two decades. His conviction in 2018 followed one of the most high-profile trials of the Me Too era. So what happened? Well, In contrast to the tumult that surrounded his trial and conviction, Cosby was released from a state prison in Collegeville, Pennsylvania, shortly after 2:30, with no members of the news media in position yet to record it. I never changed my story or my stance. I have always maintained my innocence, Cosby tweeted Wednesday night. Thank you to all my fans, supporters, and friends who stood by me through this ordeal. Special thanks to the Pennsylvania Supreme Court for upholding the rule of law. So what happened here ultimately is that the Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruled that a prosecutor's decision in 2015 that he would not pursue a criminal case against Cosby prompted Cosby to utter self-incriminating statements at his civil trial, basically admitting to many of the things that the women had alleged that he had done to them. A subsequent prosecutor then used that information to convict him. That, the court ruled, violated Cosby's Fifth Amendment rights. David Wecht, who was the justice, said that Kevin Steele, the current district attorney of Montgomery County, Pennsylvania, was obligated to stand by his predecessor Bruce Castor's promise. And we remember Bruce Castor, yes?
Yes.
Yes, Bruce
Castor.
Very
oily fellow.
Bruce Castor was the gentleman.
I got it.
Yeah, thank you. Castor oil. Yeah, he was the one of the defenders of Donald Trump and the second impeachment trial. Very well prepared in that. Well, by the way, his promise not to charge Cosby, the court deemed Steele's violation so "quote unquote" vast that it ruled his office may not put Cosby on trial for those charges again. So as it stands, at least to my knowledge, at this moment, he cannot be returned to jail unless one of two things happen. The Supreme Court of the United States overturns the decision, which has rarely have ever been done, so there's no chance in hell that's going to happen. And or that you would have another victim who would be within the statute of limitations. And we will remember the woman who actually brought this case was, I think, within 5 or 6 days of it expiring as far as the statute of limitations. So that would obviously have to all happen. Let us not forget two things, and then we'll welcome you all into this conversation. One is that 60 women have accused Bill Cosby of drugging and sexually assaulting them. 60 women. 5 went on the stand in this trial in Pennsylvania. He has served 2 years in jail of a 10-year sentence. This, we should note, and it's probably a small consolation, this, him getting out of prison, by no way means that he did not commit these crimes, nor that he was not guilty of them, but basically got out on this technicality because he was promised one thing and the court did another.
And Joe, if I remember this correctly, he actually had this drugging stuff in his comedy routine. He actually talked about it.
He did.
Yeah, so...
I don't remember that.
Yeah,
say more.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what I remember. I remember that as part of his comedy routine, and Joe will remember more than I do.
He would talk about... Yeah. He would talk about... I mean, it probably meant more later than it did at the time, but it was basically about you slip something into the drink and then you know have an easier date and that kind of stuff. And I think it was fairly accepted at the time, and yet when you look back on it, it was just really creepy.
Okay, let me unbulge my eyes at this point.
Okay.
Wow.
Okay. And it goes back, I think that particular routine goes back many, many years, but Alan's, but so do the allegations, of course. Who would like to comment on what happened to Mr. Cosby yesterday?
Ryan.
I am not going to surprise you. Let's just put it that way. I mean, I can imagine that for the victims and many other people, this is just devastating stuff. The Me Too movement was a long time in coming, and it's still here. It just shouldn't be okay for some people to go to work and get to do their job in an environment where their gender doesn't matter, and for other people to go to work or to deal with other people in their job and have their gender matter and have it somehow create a really tough environment. It just shouldn't be okay. And the Me Too movement has come for a long time. You know, for me, and you know, I'm your cheery person on the panel. I'm always trying to look for a silver lining. I think we are making slight progress, because the really important part of the Me Too movement isn't just the really high-profile individuals, the Cosbys and the Weinsteins and, you know, the Epsteins and, you know, all those folks. The really important part is the institutional stuff, because there is a lot of institutional harassment. There is a lot of institutional problems for women. And you're seeing, and it's glacial, and it's small, but you are seeing more attention to those kinds of issues.
We say this often, and Dorsey, I want to get to you, but we say this often when we're talking about powerful white men who are able to do something that no one else is able to do, i.e. get out of prison. And yet here you have one of the richest men in the world who was able to do this, and you wonder, well, how level is that playing field? Would anyone else who had been convicted of that crime been able to get out and have it overturned by the judge and by the court?
Well, but wealth and stature makes a difference. I mean, look at Martha Stewart. How did she spend her jail time?
Yeah.
So, you know,
is still back on the air, being quite famous right now.
Absolutely. You bet.
And I have nothing against Martha Stewart, but I just want to say, if you have stature in this society and you have the money to try to figure out where those sort of tiny little loopholes are, these good things can happen to you. And that's really discouraging.
Dorsey.
Yeah, surprisingly, this was very quiet, especially given all of the noise surrounding the case and the conviction. And it was just a whisper. I think people are waking up to, oh my gosh, Bill Cosby is home free. But, you know, this prompted me, and I'm going to go there. This prompted me to think about the most recent Chauvin sentencing.
Right.
Because the judge made a point to say in his remarks, this was about following the rule of law, and the sentencing was based on the rule of law and fairness based on that. And so this is the same, and granted, I was so disappointed hearing the results of that, the sentencing.
22 and a half years, he could have received up to 40, so basically half the time. That
for the death of a, for the, death for of the, a human being?
Yeah, murder the murder of, another human, of a human being.
Yes.
Human being, exactly.
Right.
And so this essentially reminded me of that, this notion that just purely looking at the law, his Fifth Amendment right was violated, and so this is the grounds for the conviction being vacated. And so, again, I throw my hands up, confused, when we talk about the fairness of our legal system. I am very perplexed by it. Nobody wins in this case. Bill Cosby, his family, this has been, I'm sure, very devastating to his wife, his kids. His reputation has been forever tarnished. I think, you know, for the black community, you know, culturally, that the Cosby family challenged so many norms and stereotypes when it came to what it meant to be a black family in this country. And so this has been a huge loss for everyone, and including the victims.
Right.
Who
we just have about 30 seconds, but go ahead. I'm sorry. And then we can return when we come back.
Oftentimes feel, why come forward when no one will hear me?
And you wonder,
or believe me.
Right. And of course now, why do I come forward if they're just going to let the guy out after a couple of years? Right. We'll continue our conversation and take a quick break. Alan Chartok, Dorsey Appleers, Fran Berman, Ira Fussfeld, and we welcome your letters on the subject. We already have quite a few. We'll get more, I know. Panel at WAMC.org will continue right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us on this Thursday morning, the 1st of July. We're talking about the comedian Bill Cosby, who was released from prison after the Pennsylvania Supreme Court on Wednesday vacated the indecent assault conviction against him. Dorsey, we were talking to you right before the break. I'd like to go back to you for a second. I know I'm with Fran in this. When she's here, I pick up her vibes. So I'm going to ask a very kind of Pollyannish question, perhaps. Aww. But let me ask this: at any point, do you think the court looked at each other and said, "What impact will this have on the victims? What impact will this have on this movement moving forward? What impact will this have on the 60 women who have made these charges?"
You know, it's hard to say. You know, that depends on the makeup of the decision makers, because as we know, this is the thoughts and the desires, the needs of the victims are almost never top of the mind for folks who don't have the lived experience, who can't empathize. And so it really depends on, who was sitting around the table making that decision. And I think the other piece here, some pride themselves on, we are making a decision purely based on fact and law. And so all of these outside perspectives, we can't factor that in when making a decision. So it's hard to say.
Yeah.
But make such a good point, Doris, because, the law books are filled with particular laws and these are the rules. But we all know that depending on the personalities or character of the judges, they can reach down and find what they want within the available resources of the law. So I think your point is well taken when you say depending on who is sitting around the table, because, you'd have to do psychoanalysis on the judges in order to figure out where they're coming from.
We want our judges to be making decisions on reasons other than the law. I mean, to Joe's question, I don't know whether they sat around and made this decision with the impact that you described on their minds, but I don't think they should have. Go ahead.
No, I agree with you, but the other way of asking the question is...
I don't.
Well, I mean, you do want your judges to look at the law and to interpret what is put in front of them. So I understand that, although I would also argue that in this case that's questionable because the deal that they're talking about was never in writing. It was a verbal agreement. Regardless, but at what point when you say that, do you look at the case itself and the person getting out, and if it was anybody else other than Bill Cosby, would the same thing have been achieved?
Comment about the law. When I was at Harvard on sabbatical as a Radcliffe Fellow, another one of the Radcliffe Fellows.
Okay, that was the coolest statement ever made on the radio.
Oh my gosh. No,
this,
this just gives you context for the person I'm going to talk about. And
it's Warren Beatty. Go ahead. No.
Another fellow was Alexi Lahav, who is a law professor at University of Connecticut, and just incredibly smart. And I learned so much from talking to her about the law, and so much of what we see, for me as a tech person, I tend to think of the law as monolithic, which is not true at all. It is contextual. It is up to... the judge's temperament, their discretion,
their character.
Facts of the case. The laws are not always consistent. The laws, what counts as evidence isn't always the same. And so these things are very contextual. And one of the things we had been talking about in the break that I'll just repeat here is it does seem that if you're rich and you're famous and you have the resources, then you can find a lawyer who really knows how to take that system and put it to your advantage. For everybody else, not so much.
No. There's something else here. He immediately puts out a statement saying, "See, I wasn't guilty."
Yeah.
I've always
contended. Which is not what this said.
I've always contended I wasn't guilty. No, he dropped the stuff in the ladies' drinks and or the women's sorry, better term, in drinks. And you know what the result was. So he was guilty.
Right. He admitted that in the civil case, and so I
but
just
that wasn't that the issue here.
Yes.
He admitted it in the civil case, but he was
but they told him they would not charge
they would
him.
Not charge him. Listen,
which is really messed up in and of itself.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, look, I obviously am not a lawyer. I don't know flat out that this is the right decision. Although I must say, I watched an interview. You may have seen it last night with one of Cosby's lawyers. With Chris Cuomo, and I thought she was very good in explaining their side. But moreover, I was expecting to see a knockdown dragout with Cuomo, and he largely agreed with her on the law. So if we and I think someone said earlier that this all happened quietly. The lawyer would say that the media did not pay attention to this issue, which was brought up apparently more than once during the course of these proceedings. So I would say to you the following: if this was the law and he was able to get off as a result of the law, we can call it a technicality, which it is. On the other hand, it is an important technicality. That said. The court of public opinion is clearly not on Cosby's side. His reputation, rightly so, has been ruined. His legacy has been ruined. And I would say the concern that I would have going forward is not that Cosby didn't serve more time at his age and standard in life, but that this will somehow prevent women from stepping forward.
Absolutely.
And that's a key issue at this point. Mm-hmm. And I would hope not.
One thing, thing to just contextualize this just a little bit. I do want to, the justices did not agree on this matter.
I was going to ask you that.
Three joined in the opinion. The three remaining justices filed two separate opinions. Justice Thomas Saylor noted that the lower court made an explicit finding Castor made no promise that the Commonwealth would never prosecute. He questioned whether the available evidence really shows that such a promise was made. Mm. So there was dissent in among the court. Alan.
Well, yeah, and I was struck by Fran, I guess, or Ira, I should listen more carefully, suggesting that this Cuomo interview last night with the lawyer. Because journalists, of course, also have contextual, as you use that word, issues. Right. So Chris Cuomo's brother is now facing a host of, you know, of choices. In terms of what he did, and one wonders whether the interviewer in this case is contextualizing what could happen to his brother with what happened to Cosby?
Yeah, I saw somebody on social media note that Cuomo seemed very uncomfortable with the whole thing. Chris.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Did you see the interview?
I did not see the interview live. I saw a portion of it this morning.
I've never been up that late, so I couldn't.
Just for the record, it's 9 o'clock. But okay.
That's 3 hours after my bedtime.
So let's go to the letters. There are many, and we'll go with those here. Cosby does not represent me as a black person. He is nefarious. He should have stayed in jail. He ruined the lives of 60 people and served 2 years. He should have served 60 years. John says Castor distorted the rules of evidence. Judge O'Neill incorrectly allowed testimony regarding crimes that had not been charged and also made some very questionable decisions about the statute of limitations. There was never any doubt that Dr. Cosby's conviction would be overturned. The law is the law. That is a good thing. I don't know about that. There was never any doubt that the conviction would be overturned. I agree with Ira. There were certainly questions all along that there was some shaky legal ground. But once you have the conviction, I didn't know. The number of cases, and I had the figure in front of me last night. I have long since forgotten it of the number of cases that are overturned that release people from prison. But it's a minuscule amount. So I don't know if that was a foregone conclusion.
There's just no doubt that others have said when you have money, you can get lawyers, and they're not going to give up on it.
Right.
If it's an average Joe, he would still be in prison.
But John's point is really interesting. John's suggesting that The judge's behavior wasn't all up and up, and I don't remember reading anything about that. I'd be interested in finding out more.
My understanding in what he's referring to is the statute of limitations. So there was some question of the statute of limitations because it was so close. And again, I'm doing this by memory, but from my understanding at the time was of being charged, and then the full process to go out would then have gone beyond the statute of limitations. But he made the declaration that it was at the time of the charges that were made.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to comment on the letter also,
yes,
in which the reference was made to Dr. Cosby.
I heard
So I know something about this because my wife, Roselle, in the School of Ed at UMass, was doing her doctorate at exactly the same time.
Oh, wow.
And so it's interesting. It would be interesting to sort of raise the question of how hard, when somebody is earning a doctorate in a school which can be very demanding, how hard it is, and whether it's easy if you're famous in the same way, if you're easy to get out of prison when you're famous, if you're following me at all.
No.
You're not.
No.
Well,
say more.
It may have been easy. It may have been a lot easier.
You think
for
they just... I don't know who his advisor was, but any advisor worth their salt is going to, you know, make everybody do an unsolved problem and make them work hard.
I love you, but are you kidding?
Well, and the point...
Remember, that was the worth their salt.
Dorsey, go ahead.
Sorry, Dorsey.
I would just add that, and this has been coming up in this conversation, we can't underestimate the implicit and explicit bias that we all hold. So whether you are a judge, a professor, those biases are there. And so there is a possibility that you show favoritism, you give someone an easier way to go, you may grade up when you should be grading down. And I think the same with judges who, you know, at face value pride themselves on, I'm just following the rule of law. That is the whole premise of this conversation about why we need to diversify the bench. We need more women. We need more people of color. We need people with different experiences, because your lived experiences and how you view the world influences how you apply the law, how you synthesize. And so, you know, we can't say that these decisions are being made in a vacuum, in isolation. And when we just look at the criminal justice system in general, and we look at who's sitting in prison, mostly people of color, the system is not fair. And the, you know, we twist and bend the law and use it and wield the power of it in ways that, I feel are based on our views, our lived experience, how we perceive others.
So let me see if I get this straight. There used to be a judge in New York who thought, as you do, that things were not fair. And so he basically let everybody go to the extent that he got a name. They gave him a nickname, which was Cut 'em Loose Bruce. So Dorsey, if we have one, theoretically, if we have one standard, which is the law should be, you know, the same for everybody, and now we say, okay, if you have a judge who thinks that the law has been abused, then we should let, I'm going to make up for that by letting everybody go, theoretically, if that's what actually happened. But that's how he got the name. Ira, you're looking...
No, I was going to ask Joe if he knew the racial makeup of this court.
I don't know. I can find out.
And the sexual makeup of the court.
Yeah, I can find out.
I mean, the fact of the matter is that I don't know if there are black people or women on the court, but they did let a black man go, and that is against the tide, generally speaking.
Well, but one of the most popular men in America.
Granted,
one
and that's,
of the richest.
And that's as we pointed out, who could afford the lawyers to continue this case and find the loose end in it.
All right, we have a lot of letters, and I really want to get to them, so let's take a break. When we come back, we will charge through them. I promise you will get your say. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. We are we're talking to Alan Chartok, Dorsey Appleers, Fran Berman, and Ira Fussfeld. That's the panel this morning. We're talking about the decision by the Pennsylvania Supreme Court yesterday to free Bill Cosby from prison. And we have a ton of letters on this. So I'm going to charge through them. As I said, if anyone wants to comment, please speak up as soon as you hear something that you want to comment on. Irene says, I was surprised to hear about Bill Cosby for about 10 seconds. It is yet another slap in the face to the victims in this case and other people that have been violated. He is wealthy and got out of paying the price for his heinous crimes through our legal system. That from Irene. Alan says, well, I'm clearly on the wrong side of this, but I just don't see why this hurts the Me Too movement and why anyone should take this as a sign of failure. I just don't know why it matters that this old man, publicly disgraced at 83 years old, needs to be in jail for us to feel the movement has been a success. Cosby does himself no good, insisting he is not guilty but not alone in this bad behavior, i.e. Trump. I think the Me Too has been a great success and has changed things dramatically in our country. Please do not turn this one event into something that should discourage women from coming forward or speaking their truth. That would be a shame. Anyone want to comment on that?
I would like to comment.
Yes, go ahead.
I really differ from the, and I appreciate the letter, but I really differ in terms of great success. It has not been a great success. I think it has done a good job in raising awareness about the lived experience of many women, professionally and personally, for a long time. I think we are making some progress institutionally, organizationally, some progress with individuals. I don't think we're making nearly enough progress. I don't think we live in an environment where women don't have to think about the fact that they're women in order to go to work or live. So great progress. I think I differ there.
On the other hand, he did spend 2 years in the can, which is something.
Two out of ten.
Well, yeah. No, I'm not arguing that it was enough. But I am arguing that he was found guilty. He was disgraced. The reputation he had was pretty well demolished. Should he have stayed in jail for a longer time? Absolutely.
Let's get serious. There is a power differential between him and, most of his victims. Imagine that you go somewhere with a really important, powerful person. They drug you. They have sex with you. This is not okay.
Hey, I ain't going to argue against that.
Well,
you
should argue against that. It's a
power
problem.
No. I'm not going to argue against what you just said.
Yeah.
And let's remember, a lot was made about him saying yesterday, I've maintained my innocence all along. Well, there are 50 or 60 women who have maintained their story all along, and they're not changing that story either.
Yeah, well, what he said was disgraceful.
Yeah.
Dorsey?
No. I'm sticking with my early comments.
Your story, and you're sticking to it.
By the way, we didn't certainly think you weren't going to stick to your story, but just checking in, that's all.
There's an old joke. Sorry about this. There's an old joke about the guy who's in prison. He comes in, and some guy yells out, 38, and everybody laughs. And he turns around to the guy with him and says, what's that? He said, well, everybody's heard that one, so we just say 38, you see? We just say 38. So you say, you try it. He says 14. And nobody laughs. And he said, what happened? He said, we all heard that one already. So, but the point really is we could really be referring to these arguments by number.
Wasn't the sentence 3 to 10? In other words, he could have gotten out soon anyway. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, he
was
sentenced to...
I don't think 10 was a minimum sentence.
I'll have to find out. You got me doing all kinds of homework here. You're asking me all that. I'll do it.
We'll vamp.
No, I'll do it. Don't worry.
Because you know everything, Joe.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say 38 is not as funny a number as 14, which I've had that discussion with you.
Maybe that's the way the discussion went.
No, because as we all know, 23 is a funny number.
Isn't that was it in the Alan Zweibel book about it was Billy Crystal that came up and said that's a funny number?
Yes, I'd heard it before that, but it wasn't the Alan Zweibel book. Yes.
All right. Julius writes, sorry for getting in the weeds with Ira. Julius says we should understand that this means Trump will never see time behind bars. The U.S. legal system is far too complex and can be defeated with enough money and political influence.
And no, that's right. And the decision specifically said he's not going to see anything based on this decision. He can't be basically imprisoned.
Unless another, another case comes forward, and then although even then it would be unlikely that somebody would be tried for a third time. Chris, we shouldn't forget that he spent 2 years in a maximum security prison. For an 80-year-old man, that is a pretty tough penalty. We also can't ignore how terrible prisons are. He served hard time in SCI Phoenix. Yeah, but he's supposed to still be there. I mean, the number is there for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I hope I never have to go close to a place like that. On the other hand, if you saw the aerial pictures yesterday, you saw the inmates playing handball, playing basketball, lifting weights. So they either got them at the right time or it's not as tough as purported to be.
Well, it's just an orthogonal issue. You know, prisons... It's an orthogonal issue.
Well, so get the dictionary.
Prisons are terrible, and nobody should, have the kind of experience that people have in prisons. But, he should be in prison.
Is that what orthogonal means? Terrible? What does that mean?
No.
Sorry.
The world wants to know.
Yeah.
What is it?
Mean? I mean, orthogonal means it's just a different, it's a different point of view.
Okay, good.
All right.
It has a mathematical meaning, but we're not going into that.
All right. Back to the letters. I can't imagine the panel sitting around saying, think about the victims that the court overturned a case for a non-famous defendant based on prosecutorial misconduct. If someone is wrongfully convicted, they should appeal it. There must be consequences when prosecutors break the law, and overturning a conviction is the remedy that our law represents.
Mm-hmm.
Chris says we shouldn't forget. Oh, no, I read that one. Susan says, as a medical social worker writing case notes, I learned that if it's not written down, it didn't happen. I can't believe the same thing isn't true in the world. We're in the world of law. And this has to do with the agreement that Cosby had with the then prosecutor, who said he wouldn't move forward, and then a new prosecutor came in and went forward with it, but it was not written down. Stacy said no, the court didn't look at each other and wonder what the impact of their legal decision would have on any alleged victims. Thankfully, in criminal court cases, that doesn't matter, and for all obvious reasons. I support and believe the victims, but the idea that judges should ignore or disregard law and consider alleged victims' feelings is just silly. There is no question that rich people have a different experience in the court system, and that should be addressed. But I sincerely hope no one is suggesting that victims' feelings matter in legal decisions. They don't and can't. So I understand the letter, and of course it's never mind. I won't go. We'll continue with the letters.
I think these letters are pointing out that, this business about obeying the law and everybody following the same law, and also all the injustices involved in this.
Charlie says, not directed at the panel specifically, but at media coverage of this at large, I think we should be careful about dismissing Fifth Amendment protection as a tiny loophole. I'm furious at Cosby for what he did, and I'm furious at his prosecutors for messing this up so badly. But who benefits when my fury is turned towards one of my own fundamental constitutional rights? That is a really good letter.
It is a good letter.
Rhonda says, hi, panel. I don't want your listeners to hear the rule of law shouldn't matter. The focal point is that only the wealthy can afford to challenge breaches of it, and only the privileged get the system going toward the lax end of their options. If the rule of law were scrupulously upheld for all, then it really is the rule of law and the way it's meant to be.
That's another good one.
Andre says, mm-hmm. It's interesting to me that Felicia Rashad released a statement that she remains fully supportive and behind Bill Cosby. Wow. So yes, the Dean of Howard University, Dean of Arts, who is taking that position, I believe, in the fall, within minutes of the decision from the court, Felicia Rashad tweeted that she was applauding the decision and said, thank goodness justice has finally been served. And within, I think it was 2 hours later, walked it back a little bit. Dorsey, did you have any comments on that?
You know, when I read it, I read it a second time, but they were work husband and wife. They spent a lot of time together. And so her experiences with Cosby may have been very different than the experiences of the women who, the victims that have come forward. And so I wasn't shocked by her statement.
Right.
Because her experiences may have been, or according to them, her statement was very different. So it, she didn't. She felt strongly that he was in it innocent and continues to be innocent, and that's what I got from her statement.
But Dorsey, don't you think that was a really personal statement? But it was really in politic as a dean
of a black university.
Well, of any university. I mean, you really, it's hard to say that when you have students who may have, you know, very similar experiences and you're their new dean.
No, I get that point, too. But I also understand, you know, her relationship with him predates her experience as dean. And this may, I'm assuming, I don't know the nature of their relationship, but someone who has potentially become family to you.
Right.
And so personally, she felt compelled to make a statement in his support. So in that, from that lens, I can understand her putting her dean hat aside. This is personal. This is family. I stand by him, and I'm making it very clear and plain.
We'll pause there, and we have many more letters to get to on this subject, and then we'll move on to other subjects as well. Alan Chartok, Dorsey Appliers, Fran Berman, and Ira Fussfeld. We will continue after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Dorsey Appliers, Fran Berman, and Ira Fussfeld make up our panel. We have many letters on the Bill Cosby story. I'll go through those, and then we'll move on to other stories. So we go to this letter from M, who says, as a victim of sexual assault my first semester of college, I buried it as many do, only for it to come out later in midlife as PTSD, etc. And the statute of limitations for all violent crime, including rape, not just murder. Violence is violence. And what you said, Fran, earlier, if there can be one thing that comes out of this, as we were talking about the impact of Me Too, that if that could be something that would come out of it, man, wouldn't that be great?
That would be really great. And I really want to tell the letter writer, thank you so much for writing in. I just can't imagine how traumatic it must be to keep reliving that. So thank you very much, and thanks for your courage.
We go to Tristan, who says, what did New York do to get around the statute of limitations for victims of child sexual abuse? Could PA do the same thing for adult victims of sexual abuse? Then this whole mess can get sorted out in the courts. Jerry said the appellate court determined that the evidence of the trial was illegal. So for those who are saying that this decision does not mean he didn't commit the crimes are wrong. The jury decided of illegal evidence. It's as if he was never tried. Fair point.
Well, it's interesting what happens after a decision is made. Quite frequently, all sides will claim victory. Donald Trump is now looking at the mayoral election in New York City and saying, basically, as I understand it, you see, that's why I was really elected president of the United States. So people will make the most insane kinds of claims after these things happen, including Bill Cosby says, see, this proves I'm not guilty.
This just came over at 10:08, so that's 2 minutes ago. So I have one line on it, but I'll just mention it, and then we'll get back to it in a second. But the Supreme Court on Thursday said that two provisions of Arizona voting law that restrict how ballots can be cast do not violate the Historic Voting Rights Act that bars regulations that result in racial discrimination. Mm-hmm. That's all I know as moment. I don't know of the numbers or what the dissent or...
So we're getting all of these new laws in state legislatures, which are basically going to help elect Donald Trump president of the United States again, because they're saying we can overturn the Secretary of State. We can take that power away from him or her. And so now the Supreme Court, true to its 6-3 colors, are coming out and saying, you know, these prohibitions against doing that don't violate, the law. Did we expect it? Did I expect it? Absolutely. This is their way of paying back Trump for their appointments.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I believe there's one other case that we're waiting on today, and that's it for the term. And what we ought to be watching for in the next week or so is whether or not Justice Breyer is going to resign or retire, because this is typically historically when justices retire after the close of this term. And we all know the importance of him retiring at a time when the current president will be able to nominate someone and get it through. And,
maybe get it through.
Well, yes, maybe get it through. But that's something we need to watch very closely over the next
week. Do you have a prediction,
so.
Ira Fussfeld?
I think he is going to retire. I think he's mindful. I think he's perfectly competent right now and under normal circumstances would continue his term. I think he can read. We were talking about earlier about whether the justices in Pennsylvania see what's going on and making a subjective decision. I think he sees what's going on and realizes it's important.
A little more.
He also has the precedence of.
Yes, and he saw what happened with Ginsburg.
Yeah, that's right.
The Supreme Court, so the vote was 6-3, written with the court's three liberal members in dissent.
I didn't even know that.
Please act shocked. The Supreme Court upheld voting restrictions in Arizona and signaled that challenges to new state laws making it harder to vote would face a hostile reception from a majority of the judges.
Surprise.
The decision was the court's first consideration of how a crucial part of the Voting Rights Act of 1965 applies to voting restrictions that have a disproportionate impact on members of minority groups, and it was issued as disputes over voting rights have taken center stage in American politics. As Republican-controlled state legislatures increasingly seek to impose restrictive new voting rules, Democrats and civil rights groups have turned to the courts to argue that Republicans are trying to suppress the vote, thwart the will of the majority, and deny equal access to majority to minority voters. The decision suggested that the Supreme Court would not be inclined to strike down many of those measures.
Back to legislation.
Yeah.
Back
Dorsey.
To legislation.
I'm here. You know, I know it's breaking news. I just feel strongly that there are so many power plays at the moment, as Alan mentioned, to ensure that Trump gets elected, reelected. And so the fact that we are having to continue to have this conversation about restrictive voting laws and practices and all of the games that are being played when it comes to trying to suppress the vote, it is just so discouraging. It really is. And but I think at the end of the day, this is, again, this is about maintaining power and control, and decision makers, lawmakers are willing to do anything that they can with their bully pulpit platforms to make sure that that power and control is maintained, and it comes at the expense of the American people, and it's so unfortunate.
All right, anybody else on that story? Fran, did you weigh in?
You know, I'm with Dorsey. I just think that, you know, in a way, you look around you and I felt and do feel that there's so much hope in the current administration in terms of the really big, hard problems they're trying to go for. And it just feels like, you know, you get the kind of 1-2 punch wherever you look. You know, you get it about gender, you get it about voting, you get it about climate. You know, it's sort of everywhere you look, it's sort of like it's hard to kind of go forward. It's harder than it should be. And it's already hard.
And they're trying to steal the election, just like they try to Trump tried to steal the election when he sent his masses up there on January 6th.
Yeah.
And they're getting away with it. That's what's terrible.
It's so blatant. It's so blatant.
You are so right, Doris.
Well, I mean, they have all of their enablers at Fox News and OAN and Newsmax, and in certain parts of the radio world, and they're repeating the lies, and you almost feel badly for people who are exposed to and listen and believe it, because they've been hypnotized, and you know, it's, you just wonder if at some point someone's going to slap them on the face, like Cher did in Moonstruck, and say, snap out of it, because that's the only way this is going to change. I keep thinking about what could be the outcome. How can this country get back to some sort of an even keel footing on which the foundation was based?
And you mean other than a civil war?
I hate to say it, but that's right. Other than a civil war.
But Ira, the folks that believe that stuff feel that you have been brainwashed, and I have been brainwashed. That
and how do they feel?
So what? They're wrong.
So you know, it's like sort of standing on one side of a fence and the other side of a fence and shooting
at
each
other.
Well, it's a Hatfield
truth.
Wait.
You don't mean that, Fran. Of all the liberal people that I know, you don't mean that they're standing on two groups are standing on either side of the fence, and they're somehow in your remark, there's false equivalency that the people on each side are. Should be judged equal. I mean, what's going to happen when the Supreme Court, when the Secretary of State for Pennsylvania or somebody else stands up and says, no, this is the way it is, they say, and the Republican legislature comes along under these rules in Arizona, these other places, and say, no, we voted to have the Secretary of State displaced if somebody didn't like what they were doing. It's unbelievable.
Well, here's what I believe. Joe is already looking at me like, oh, God, not another Pollyanna thing.
No.
But, you know, I really think if we treat each other like different species, this is not good news.
We are different species.
We are all one species. We have really different beliefs and really different sources of information.
But wait.
Hold on. I'm just telling you what I believe. You don't have to believe this.
Fair enough.
And, you know, I do think when these conversations are so polarized and so difficult and coming from such different places, it just seems impossible to try to, you know, get any kind of thing going on. I mean, you all know that, you know, my focus is, you know, tech in the public interest, but it's everything in the public interest. But you have to have some sort of agreement as to what that public interest is and some sort of action in terms of how we promote that.
But
and I really worry about that.
But wait, isn't there such a thing as right or wrong when you try to take away the rights of black people to vote? So obviously that it isn't as if there's two sides to every story. There's no side to the story of trying to repress the black vote and to be as megalomaniacal as some of these people are.
Well, I'm with you on that, but I've talked to other people who think that their point of view is right and that there's not a problem.
Well, but they're wrong.
I'm sorry, Dorsey, did I interrupt you?
I was just going to say what's right and wrong is subjective. And there are still people who believe that black people don't deserve to be citizens. There are still people who believe black people shouldn't have the right to run down the street to breathe. And so when you have that deeply ingrained disgust, hatred, dislike, it is easy to feel that, you know, what's right is that you keep people who you don't view as human. The same conversation can be had about people who feel so opposed to immigrants. They don't deserve to vote. They don't deserve to have the same liberty and rights as I do. And so some people feel very, very strongly about that.
Yeah, I agree.
And from where they sit, they are right.
They from their sit, wait. No. They're not right. They're wrong.
Well, they believe they're right.
They believe they're right.
Hitler believed he was right, but he wasn't. Don't you see?
So how do we get out of it? We've outlined the situation pretty succinctly. How do we get out of it? We had a civil war in this country, and it largely did what it was supposed to do in that it ended slavery and all the rest. Yet here it is 150 years later, and we know that racism still exists, and in some quarters may be worse than it ever was, so that the Civil War really has never ended, although we put the guns down, until perhaps the next time. How do we get out of it? One side says this, the other side says that. Let's take Fran's point that the liberals have voices in their ears that are similar to the voices that are whispering or yelling in the ears on the right. How do we get out of it?
But Ira, It's not a question of how we get out of it. There's also a question of right or wrong. Black people in this country are citizens. Because they have some pigment in their skin doesn't mean that we have to do this theory of false equivalency that there are people on both sides who are concerned about. There is a right and wrong, isn't there?
According to your side, you yes. believe you're right. The other side believes you're wrong.
Well, you think that those people, those bigots who are out there, Ira, who are saying, you know, that the black people don't have the right to vote and we have to take away their ballot boxes and we can't allow them to, the same things that that all Americans are allowed to have. You know, we can't be arguing that there's right and wrong on both sides. We just can't.
I couldn't agree with you more, but the fact is we are.
Alan, do you have any family members who voted for Trump?
No.
Well, a lot of us do. Mm. I don't know about you guys, but most people, well, many people Check. I know have a family member who voted for Trump. And, you know, you talk to these people. These are people who, you know.
We know and love.
Try to find facts. Their facts are different than my facts. You know, have belief systems. Don't think things that I think are problems and think they're right. And I'm not suggesting that in my opinion and in my belief system that they're right. But I think we have to, you know, do something other than call them names and tell them that they're, you know, thoughtful conclusions, which are pretty different and sometimes really pretty awful, are wrong. I mean, that's just not the way to do it.
I don't see it the same way that you do. I mean, I do think there is such a thing as right and wrong. I do think that black Americans, based on their skin pigmentation, have every right that I have.
I agree with that.
Yeah, I know you do. So then why don't you turn around and say, well, I got a relative, Uncle Sam, who comes to the
Uncle Thanksgiving. Uncle Sam. I hope not Uncle Sam.
Yeah. He's buried in our hometown, though.
Okay, I exceed. Uncle Irving, who comes to Thanksgiving dinner and shoots his big mouth off, you know, about Trump being the savior of American democracy when he's nothing but a potential fascist. You know, it seems to me we've got to recognize the reality of how serious the situation is. We saw him send those people up there on January 6th. We saw him try to decry a transference of votes. I don't understand how we can argue that there's some right and wrong on both sides.
I think, Alan, it is more so, you know, I think this is why we lost, Hillary lost. There is a segment of our population that people, and including myself, I have to admit to it, I guess I was somewhat in denial. I mean, I know racism exists. I know that there are people who hate others because of the color of their skin. But I didn't know how, I don't want to say powerful, but when Trump won, I think it was an eye-opener to me and so many others.
Yeah.
Because it was just never in my wildest dreams could he win. And so I think the point being made is that there is a segment of this population who feels so strongly about this, and hence why you had during the presidential election, I know in the black community, the sentiment was vote as if your life depends on it, because we understand that literally our lives depend on who is making decisions.
Yeah.
And so that is why people are fighting tooth and nail to maintain voter rights, to flip states so that we have people in power who agree with the sentiment like you that we all should have access in rights. And I think on the flip side, hence why you have people who storm the Capitol and decision makers who are fighting so hard to suppress the vote, to make sure that they maintain a sense of power and control in a way that complete opposite to what people like yourself, I believe. And so it is not saying that it's right that they feel that way. Mm. It is acknowledging that that is how people feel.
I so completely agree with you. And it gets back to me, Dorsey, with Ira's question, because I'm really challenged by that. I don't know what to do. You know, discussion doesn't go very far. And when people are so polarized and power can be so destructive, you know, I'm really challenged by what more can I do? And what more can we all do? And I don't know.
You could get out there with a sign. You can protest. You can call your elected representatives. You can write letters to the paper. You can do all of those things. I think right now there's a quiescence about, if that's the right word, about all of this on the part of too many of us.
Do you really think so?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think we're beginning to fight when you realize how powerful this is. This guy, Trump, is changing the laws in those states. By the way, he didn't get the most votes when he got elected. We know that. And he's changing the laws so that that will happen again. So that if a Secretary of State says, well, I'm going to say this is our law, we'll take it away, we'll fire the Secretary of State. This is how you lose a democracy.
All right. We have a break coming up. I just want to quickly announce that there was the other court decision that was made. The Supreme Court struck down California requirements that nonprofits disclose major donors. 6-3 vote with conservatives and the majority and the liberals dissenting. So that is once again a through line for today. Under the California law, the tax-exempt groups were to attach to their filings with the state a copy of their IRS form reporting the names and addresses of all donors who gave more than $5,000 or 2% of the organization's total donations. The case was brought by the Americans for Prosperity Foundation, a tax-exempt nonprofit founded by Charles Koch and his brother David, who died in 2019, as well as the Thomas More Law Center, another conservative group. Historically, it is the state attorneys general who police charities, and in California, a state with 115,000 charities, that is a big job.
And we know what that's all about. You got to give us the names, and we're going to turn off people who are giving you money to the liberal groups. That's what that's about.
And the concern of dark money was obviously there as well. All right, we have to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue. We'll wrap up our program today. Alan Chartok, Dorsey of Pleers, Fran Berman, and Ira Fussfeld. We welcome you to join us. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We're going to take a quick break, have a BBC newscast, and we'll return for our wrap-up right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Dorsey of Pleers, and Ira Fussfeld. A spirited discussion going into the break has generated a lot of letters, so we will go to those. We go to Kevin. I find some flaws with some of the discussion today. The liberal group that argues racism is inherently wrong has no problem with the murderous act of abortion, something that the conservative group thinks is wrong. You can't argue one thing is inherently wrong without looking at everything. Speaking for myself, it's obvious racism is wrong. It's also obvious abortion is wrong. In the words of the great Dr. Chartok, we know this. That goes. That brings us to Mike's letter. To take an extreme example, it is now legal to send a private army to overthrow the government when you don't like the outcome of an election. This is true because the majority of the senators say it is true. Given that, nothing is inherently right or wrong. The only thing we can do is hope to teach enough people to agree with us. If that fails, democracy fails. Then,
see, I'm a great believer that there are things that are right and wrong.
Disappointed with Fran Berman's remarks, says Joe. You, not me. You can't say beliefs are equivalent without knowing where and how those beliefs are learned and maintained. I believe we liberals base our beliefs on established moral code, well-researched literature and journalism, etc., not from propaganda channels with no foot or end notes.
You know, and I appreciate that letter. I've really struggled with this, I have to tell you, because when I talk to people who believe pretty differently than me, and I always try to do that respectfully, because I do believe that in the end we are the same species. You know, I don't trust those sources of information, and I don't trust a lot of that evidence. But what always strikes me, and it'd be interesting to hear Joe's reaction to this, which I can't because he just wrote a letter, is that they sort of feel the same way about my sources of information and about the things I read. And, you know, like we were talking about with Ira before, I'm not quite sure how to get around that.
Well, it seems to me that there is such a thing as, I made this point about five times already, right?
I mean, I'm a scientist. I believe in evidence.
There's right and wrong. We got a letter from somebody who said, you see, on the one hand, you have abortion, and Shattuck is wrong about abortion. Well, you know, in the case of abortion, a woman's right to determine her own, you know, her own, to what happens with her own body seems to me to be right. You know? So that's okay. There are those people who say, well, it's in the Bible. It is. You can't do that. And they're just wrong. So I do think there is such a thing as right and wrong.
David says, I agree with you, Alan. There is right and wrong, but please be careful with the word they. They are wrong is a dangerous sentence. When we group people together, whether it be Republicans, Trump supporters, or other general groups, we start to make stereotypes that are a slippery slope to the stereotypes that led to racism and genocide. I believe there are supporters of Trump who are racist. Let's not fall into the same kind of hatred. There is a right and wrong, but we have to be careful with the word they.
So there is a right and wrong.
Doreen says, just yesterday I had a relative tell me that someday I will come to realize that mask wearing is nothing but a scam. They also think Trump is the best president we've ever had. This is not my only relative who feels that way. I agree with Alan in that I believe they are wrong.
So think of all those Germans who stood up at Nuremberg and did Heil Hitler when he came around. Come on.
Justin says, thank you for your conversation. I'm thinking about the differences the American people face. I think sometimes we conflate the beliefs of those in power with those who follow them. If we take Trump, for instance, Trump may have terrible intentions behind his actions, but he sells those intentions as patriotic duties. They don't sell it as, let's take the right to vote away from black people. They sell it as, let's secure our elections so that the Democrats can't steal the election from the true will of the American people. It doesn't mean that it's not completely wrong. It just means people are sold a reality that benefits those in power.
Right.
George says, I am 72 years old, and it just occurred to me that I have living in an apartheid country under the guise of a democracy. I have been given opportunity for just being born white, denying others has no place in a democracy. Bob says, maybe one way to settle what's right or wrong is to start confronting the phony news sites like One America News and Newsmax. If such channels were recognized to be propaganda machines not protected by the First Amendment, they would soon be sued out of existence, and real facts supported by evidence would regain their power to convince people.
Ira?
Well, I said that in a different way, but the marketplace will make the decision on that. Newsmax and One America News are still relatively small operations, and they can't subsist unless they have a revenue stream, and who's going to give them the revenue stream but the public?
But the Koch brothers.
Well,
I mean, come on.
But I think what we need, if I was going to say, what do I answer my own question and say, what do? We somehow have to have the patriots in this country who are willing to stand up in the Senate, just as they did many years ago against McCarthy. Finally, it took a while. I think I'm reading Jake Tapper's first novel before I read his second novel, and it's fiction based on fact. But Margaret Chase Smith was a voice out of the wilderness in that time, and slowly there was a drumbeat against the McCarthyism of the era. You need to have people standing up, and like Liz Cheney is doing and Kinzinger are doing.
Liz Cheney just appointed to the January 6th.
Well, that's good. That's not a surprise, but good news. Well, we need to have somehow, it's got to be a drumbeat. I don't see that happening sooner than later, but that's my prescription.
No, I just watched an hour and a half biography on public television, I think it was, of the McCarthy years and what happened to him. And yeah, you got to start somewhere, and then you got to go forward, and you got to make it happen. McCarthy was a terrible scourge in this country.
I don't know if you, Joe, you've read the first chapter. Yeah. I mean, a lot of that book is based in the 50s in the McCarthy era, but there are a lot of similarities to today. In fact, including an attack on Congress in which a congressman died.
Absolutely.
So these are things are not brand new, but somehow we got past it in the 50s, and that whatever that prescription was then has to happen now. And in those days, we didn't have the Fox Newses of the world,
so or 24-hour news.
And what if we
makes
don't
it
get
more
past
difficult.
It? What's you that? Say we have to get past it. What if we don't get past it? What if it goes the other way?
As our friend Rosemary Romero would say, we're doomed.
Dorsey, anything you'd like to add to this conversation?
You know, I just go back to leadership and the notion that leadership matters. And I think, you know, when you think about the civil rights movement and other movements, the focus was really on who was in power and changing policies. And that, I think, is where folks who feel this notion of right or wrong, who say that we all deserve, you know, respect and liberty and justice, that energy needs to be spent making sure people have the right to vote, going back to how we started this conversation.
That's right.
Because ultimately it dictates who is making decisions, who's writing policy. And so, you know, that's where I think the power lies. But also, you can't take away power from the people. It's not just about who's in leadership, but it is also about people feeling empowered to fundamentally fight and push decision makers to make the right decisions. And so I think it's not just it goes both ways. And so I don't think that we're doomed. This country has been here before over and over and over again. And ultimately, there are people in this world who want to see everyone live, thrive, and strive. And so those are the people, for me personally, that I want making decisions when it comes to me and my family and my community. And so it's this sentiment that you do what you have to do to make sure that those are the folks that get to decide and make those policy decisions.
Let's go to a few letters. We just have about 3 minutes left. Marty says, right and wrong are not subjective, and facts are provable. We need education, all in shouty caps. Thank you, Alan, for standing firm on this. Jude says, the outdated status quo of white, and I am one, supremacist men on top are so threatened by the feminizing and browning of America, they are running amok, terrified of losing their power. David says, wrong is wrong. However, evil always thinks it is doing good. And we go to Judy, who says, the plain truth is we are not a democracy. Oh, this is depressing. We are not a democracy anymore. The fragile experiment has failed.
I want to go back to the letter before that. It hasn't failed yet, not till they get their way. But I want to go back to the letter before that. Which is, you know, so instructive. Can you read that one, Joe?
Is the one that said Alan is right?
No.
What was the?
If I remember, that's
I'm sorry.
Point. Yeah, don't worry about it.
Hold on, I can quickly. I think I can. Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Okay, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I didn't strike while the iron was
that
hot.
That was all right. I was going down, so now they're buried more. We get a lot of letters, so
ahead,
one of the problems. The plain truth, okay, I read that. So we only have 2 minutes left. I don't even feel like we have time for another topic, but go ahead.
No, I'll throw in, it's ancillary to this, is that I'm reading reports, and there was quite a lengthy report on CNN last night, that anti-Semitism has never been worse in this country than it is now. The incidence of Jewish people being attacked has increased. They interviewed a number of young students who still wear yarmulkes wherever they go, who are afraid to wear them when they go out in the street. Just another brick on the load. It's horrible.
The other part of that story was that I saw that story last night, and it was John Bourbon filling in for Anderson Cooper, but a high level of prejudice among younger people toward Jews. Young Americans say they are seeing a new face of anti-Semitism among their progressive college classmates, who are bullying and shunning them purely for their Jewish faith.
Yes, they showed a van with written on the side of the van, "Hitler was right."
It's all very hard to digest and take and understand in any way, shape, or form.
There's a lively way to go into the weekend.
Exactly. With a skip in your step. Yeah. Absolutely. All right. My thanks to everybody. Alan, thank you so much.
Thanks, Joe.
Be well. Dorsey, thank you. Always good to hear you.
Yeah, come again. Will you please? More often.
Thank you very much. Fran Berman, delight to have you in the studio. Thank you very much for being here.
Great to be here, you guys.
Ira, always a pleasure. Off to Trader Joe's?
I'm going to skip Trader Joe's.
All right. All right.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here. I'll be back right after this.